Hello, I'm Mark DeLuzio. Over the past century, our constitutional republic, grounded in the rule of law, has been transformed into a tyrannical democracy, orchestrated by unelected bureaucrats and globalists. The Constitution is now treated as a suggestion, not the law of the land. Welcome to the Constitution Solution, one podcast under God.
Hi, I'm Mark's co-host, Suzette Lawrence. Our intention is to explore the Constitution and discuss how our freedoms and constitutional rights are violated by those very politicians who took an oath on the Bible to uphold it. Learn how the Constitution is the solution to our country's problems. What do we need to do to restore our inalienable and enumerated rights? Class begins now.
Mark DeLuzio and Suzette Lawrence. Suzette, how are you today?
I'm doing great. I'm very excited to hear what Kathy has to share. It's pretty interesting.
Well, we have Kathy Kaluch, who is a guest on this show. So if you're looking on YouTube, you'll see Suzette on the bottom and Kathy in the upper right-hand corner. I think that's how it's going to work. And then, of course, you'll see me. I think you could tell me from them, so that shouldn't be a problem. Kathy is here. A little bit of an introduction. I met Kathy at the Arizona Free Enterprise luncheon about a month or so ago, and we got talking. She happened to just sit next to me at lunch, and we got talking about what she does. And I was intrigued by the mission that she's on. She is looking to, I'll let Kathy explain, but it's an assault on our education system. And the title of this episode, and if you're keeping track, this is episode 37. It's called The Federal Government's Assault on Private For-Profit Schools. And one of the things I want to kind of lay out here up front is one of the tenets of the Marxist agenda is to, one of the 10 tenets, is to control education. You control education, you control their kids' minds, and you are forming all these nice little Marxists as they grow up, right? And that is a big deal here. And I think we can probably argue right now we're already into that in a lot of different respects of how kids are coming out ill-educated and miseducated. And the assault on these private for-profit schools is what Kathy is all about. Now, her title, she has a couple. She's the president and founder of Studio Academy of Beauty. And I Kathy, that's... Those are schools that you opened. They're all here in Arizona. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. And how many schools are there?
I have three. I have one in Chandler, one in Phoenix, and one in Charleston.
Awesome. Awesome. And you're also the president and chair of AACS, the American Association of Cosmetology Schools, correct?
Yes.
And that's an association that covers around 650 beauty barber type schools, institutes around the country. That's a nationwide thing.
Yes.
Okay. So you have been involved in a legal battle with the Department of Education. And let me just kind of turn it over to you to give us a little summary about what this is all about and why is it important? Why is it important that we're talking about it on this constitutional podcast? And again, I think you'll know, tied right back to this whole business about Marxism, because we are Suzette and I are adamant about the fact that there's a Marxist takeover of this country. And I know we sound like black helicopter conspiracy theorists, right? But one of the episodes that we did, Kathy, if you go back and listen on our podcast, is how we compare the Communist Manifesto to the things that are going on in our government today. And it's one for one. I mean, every single tenet of the Communist Manifesto are somehow being implemented by our government, many times in the spirit of what's good for us. And so we go back and we detail all of that. And that's why I was really intrigued about what you're doing, because this is ground level stuff. And you're fighting this, which I admire you for. There's not many people who they may complain, but can they really do something about it? And that's what you're doing here. So let me kind of turn it over to you and kind of give us a summary of what's going on. Where do you see the constitutional issues here? Also, you talked about the little bit of history too and how this all kind of evolved over the course of time with the Obama administration and everything else. So let me turn it over to you. I'll shut up. Susan, any comments before Kathy gets rolling?
No, I'm just really excited that Kathy's with us and sharing this, because who would know about this, you know? And well, and then she's going to talk about the Chevron doctrine, which I actually have investigated. So this is very similar to that. And so I'm very excited to hear like the full story from someone who's in it to win it. So Kathy, take it away.
Okay,
Kathy.
Well, first of all, thank you so very much for having me on today and for giving me a voice to a wider audience. What I have found is that our issue really flies under the radar. It's not in mainstream media. So when I got up and spoke at that lunch that you talked about, Mark, it was amazing the response that I got. Yep. Because nobody really knows about this. And it's really important that everybody understands this, because it affects our future. It affects the freedom of choice in higher education, because it's being taken away systematically over time. So what I want to do is kind of just give you a 1 minute history lesson in how did financial aid come to be? And you know, I made some notes so I wouldn't make any mistakes here. So in 1917, there was the Smith-Hughes Act, which was the Magna Carta of vocational education. That's when, at that time, Congress directed a Department of Education to provide financial assistance for people that wanted to go to school. But it was really after World War II that it elevated, and they created the GI Bill, and they started to include more schools, more vocational schools, beyond just the colleges and the universities. And in the 1960s, they created the Higher Education Act, which then created the Title IV funds, which are the loans and the grants. So if you have kids and they filled out a FAFSA to go to school, right? You're familiar with that. And in 1968, Congress made it very clear that all schools, profit, for-profit schools, were included in financial aid as long as the educational training led to, and these are two very important words, gainful employment. But there's no definition attached to gainful employment. It's like, go to school and get a job and not be on government assistance. And for the past 60 years or so, that has been the standard. And that all started to change in 2011 in the Obama administration, when they got together because they didn't like some of the for-profit schools. They don't like private schools. They don't like people earning a living on education. They want to wipe out the whole capitalism. They want to take all of education. They want to take all of these trade schools, not just what I do, which is beauty, barber, and wellness, but all of them. There's allied health. There's computer electronics. I mean, on a side note, I cut my teeth back in 1989 at a computer electronics school, and I started an avionics program, and I don't know anything about a jet engine. And then I ran a very large allied health school, which is medical assisting, surgical technology, x-ray, all the people that we need in the medical industry. Those are all for-profit trade schools. Your HVAC schools, your AC repairmen come from trade schools. And so there was this kind of this first, you know, their first swipe at how to eliminate for-profit schools by attaching a definition to gainful employment. And they took some squirrely a definition that's used in the mortgage industry that came from an economist that I believe is from London. And they tried to use that definition for a debt to income ratio that you'd get approved for a loan on what would be considered acceptable as a graduate of a for-profit school. And back then, I really wasn't involved, but right away there was pushback. Somebody sued, and the judge said, yeah, arbitrary and capricious, and he threw it out. Well, they went back to the drawing board, and they came back with the first gainful employment rule. And I mean, I can get into how a rule becomes a rule. I can get to that later maybe, but they were successful in getting this rule through the process. And basically what they did was added this definition that a student had to have a certain debt to their income. And if a school, and only for-profit schools, not universities, not community colleges, not the Harvards of the world, nobody, only the for-profit schools. If your graduates did not meet these metrics 2 years in a row, then that school would lose eligibility for financial aid, which is how schools survive. And you would close your doors and the students would lose their opportunity. Now,
last I checked, Kathy, Harvard is a for-profit school.
Well, not their tax status.
Not their tax
all
status.
All schools are for-profit schools in a...
Right, you know, right. I mean, you know, Harvard, last I checked, they had a $60 billion endowment.
Okay? Right.
And we still give, the federal government still gives them financial aid. I'm not talking about student loans. I'm not talking about financial aid for their students. We still send money to Harvard.
Yes.
And Tucker Carlson did a piece on this a while back. And his conclusion was that, do you think, and I know I've been involved in the political world in general does not attract the best and brightest, okay? Now, there are some brilliant people in Congress, don't get me wrong. However, how is it that all their kids are going to these Stanfords and Ivy League schools? Are they all brilliant? Okay. And there's a quid pro quo there in terms of the financial aid going to these schools. When I say financial aid, I'm not talking about a student aid.
Right.
Financial taxpayer dollars going to these schools and their kids getting elected. I don't know. Is Chelsea Clinton that brilliant that she got elected? She got into Stanford. And oh yeah, by the way, her first job with Bain Capital was $600,000 a year. Okay. So you tell me what's not going on there. And it's happening on both sides of the aisle, which is part of the problem. Nobody's calling foul on any of this. So, yeah, we can talk about these schools being quote-unquote nonprofit, but I'll give you an example of a for-profit organization. And I might be 2 years off on this, but Nancy Brown, well, I don't begrudge her at all, but Nancy Brown is the CEO of the American Heart Association. She pulled down over $2 million a couple of years ago. And the top 10 people that work for her average $600,000 in compensation. Now, I don't begrudge them at all, but when people say nonprofit, they automatically think about poverty and they're struggling and they're impoverished and oh, we need to just do everything we can to help their benevolent endeavors. That is total bull. And so you're right. It's just a tax status. And,
right.
And that's all
just
it is.
Tax status.
Yep. Yep.
We pay exactly. Taxes.
That's right.
On our income.
That's right.
And we have no endowments. So, yes.
Nope. I have a baseball card collection. I don't know. Maybe that's my endowment.
But, right.
From 1968, by the way. Some pretty good cards. But yeah, you're right. I mean, it's not right. So I just really scoff at when people say, oh, that's for nonprofit. We should just, you know, make all kinds of exceptions for these nonprofits. Uh-uh. Nope.
Yeah.
That's just my view. Anyway, I'm sorry.
No. Good conversation. So the 2016 rule went through the negotiated rulemaking process, which is where you get all the people in the sector, all of higher education, right. And the Department of Education brings forward all the different rules that they want to propose, and they hope to get consensus after discussion. It's a dog and pony show. It's just a process. It's a government process you have to go through. Of course, there was not consensus, but they enacted, if you go through a public comment period, and it doesn't really matter what you write, they're going to enact the rule.
They already know what they're going to do.
They already know what they're going to do. Yeah. And at the time we knew. So back then, even in 2016, I was not the president of the National Trade Association. I was a member of it. But the American Association of Cosmetology Schools sued then as well, because this rule particularly targets beauty schools more than the others, because what we educate in, our graduates go into a service industry where they rely heavily on tips, mm-hmm. and tips are largely unreported. Mm-hmm. So the Department of Education has even publicly stated they understand that there is an issue with the data that they have on income, but that doesn't change the rule. They admit that the data is flawed, but they still move forward. So in the first rule, they did have an appeals process, but they required so that a school could have alternate earnings. Like, you could reach out to all your graduates and say, how much are you making? Well, I've learned there's three things you don't ask people. You don't ask them how old they are. You don't ask them how much they weigh. And you don't ask them how much money they make. They either overinflate or they under, because they don't want people to know. And so here we are asking our graduates how much money they're making. And if they're not reporting their tips, they're afraid of blowback, they're gonna get turned in. And so the original rule said you had to have 100% of your graduates respond. And we argued that's ridiculous. And the judge agreed and said, I get things from my law school all the time and I just delete it. And so it was negotiated in court down to 50%. So, I tell you, I remember this. It was very challenging, but we got 50% of our graduates to respond with different numbers than the government had. And we were able to pass. And that is really what saved the cosmetology schools, was that alternate appeals that you could do. And so we went on our merry way. Then, you know, the skies opened up and President Trump was elected. And even though it took him 3 years, because he had a lot coming at him at first, on July 1st of 2019, he rescinded the gainful employment rule, him and Betsy DeVos, Secretary of Education Betsy DeVos. So there was a reprieve. We didn't have to, you know, provide the data and go through this burdensome process, and we were going to be able to stay in business, and, you know, it was great. But fast forward a year, right, 2020, Biden is elected, and the Department of Education goes back to work, and now we have gainful employment 2.0 on steroids. They've made it even harder. They've kept the debt to income ratio, but they've taken away, they used to have zones. They've taken away zones that you could be in and still meet the metric. And the judge in the first case told the department, you need to fix this appeals process. You need to have a fair process. Well, they didn't fix it. They eliminated it. So based on flawed data, and I'll talk about other things. If the government says we didn't meet the metric, if we're not at 8% debt to income, then you fail gainful employment.
By the way, the zones that you talked about, Kathy, were they relative to represent the different economic statuses of different parts of the country?
No. Yeah, we can talk about that. There's no equity here on part the first rule, parts of the country, or even rural to metro, right?
That's another thing. Like, I can imagine, you know, New York City lot different than rural Mississippi, for example.
Exactly. Right? Even, you know, Sholo to Scottsdale.
Oh, sure. Right here in
Arizona. It comes very different. So,
Kathy, let me ask you a question. You know, the Chevron Doctrine, and Suzette, you and I should probably do a complete episode on the Chevron Doctrine, right? Was just recently overturned. And it was interesting because, you know, the Chevron Doctrine allowed agencies, as long as they were quote unquote reasonable, I have no idea what that means, to interpret the law and all that, even if it's in conflict with a court's ruling. And so the Supreme Court just recently overturned the Chevron Doctrine because, boy, I tell you, here's another example where you're not represented anymore because these agencies, who do you call? Who do you call at the Department of Education? 1-800, I don't give a damn, you know, because you can't call your congressman. This is now in the executive branch of government, the Department of Ed and all these other agencies. So you can't call your congressman. And I guess you could. But all you do is get back a form letter about how they're outraged, but nothing will happen. So if you call the right congressman, by the way. But a question for you, Kathy, is this. What do you think is the underlying issues going on here with when Obama did what he did? And then, of course, when Biden reversed Trump's movement with DeVos and the Department of Ed, what do you think underlying all of this? It's not that they hate beauty schools. It's not that they don't want anybody to improve their appearance. What do you think is going on here, really, at the end of the day?
So I think there's two things. Mm-hmm. I think that the Biden-Harris administration and this current Department of Education, I think it's a little bit of a retaliation back at the fact that the Little Beauty School Association beat them in court the last time because they added another level of the compliance metric, which I'll get to in a minute. That's just, you guys will be amazed. And it really boxes us in and we just can't win. But I believe it goes back to a foundational ideological narrative that education should be controlled by government.
Yep.
Because this rule does not apply to the beauty, barber, and wellness programs at our community colleges, or the medical assisting, or the ACE, or the HVAC programs in our community college. So it's the Department of Education called cosmetology a low-value program and said taxpayer financial aid should not fund the program. In a private school like mine, but it's okay for you to take the program at a government institution like a community college, and we'll fund you over there. So it's about their whole long-term vision, I believe, is to take all of these trade schools and move all of them into the community colleges where they can control it. And they make it free, right? And our taxes go up, and then, you know, we're all paying for everybody to go.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Free education. That's right. Yeah, oh, yeah, I'm all for that. Yeah. That means teachers technically would have to work for nothing.
Right. It'll be slavery. Gets votes. It gets votes.
Yeah. So they're looking to reduce competition, essentially. So you could have, I mean, this reduces competition. When you have competition, you have to do better.
Well, you're right on the money. You're right on the money, Suzette. Quality goes away when there's no competition. I know that in business.
Well,
I know that in business, yeah.
I will tell you that the private, you know, trade schools, whatever the discipline is, there's not all that government red tape. We can pivot very quickly to workforce needs. And they're changing all the time. And even in the beauty industry, it's changed. You know, in the 18 years I've had my schools, people are not working for the franchises, the big salons like they used to. They're starting their own businesses. They're doing independent suites.
That's right.
So our education has had to evolve and change so that they'll be successful as inter- independent entrepreneurs and not just as an employee. Government, anything that you have government, it takes longer to change. And there's just, I don't want to put down our community colleges, but, you know, their outcomes are not the same as ours. Like the average, like across the country, the graduation rates at private for-profit beauty schools are over 70%, sometimes 80%. Our licensure rates, because all of these disciplines require licensure, are 90% or 98% or higher, because we are accredited by a national accreditor, which requires us to have these outcomes. Right. Or you lose your accreditation, which then you lose financial aid. We're just held to a higher standard over the government-run institutions.
Does a certificate from one of your schools carry more marketability than it would from a community college?
Well, I think so. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've just finished having our career fairs and our advisory board, mm-hmm. and we talk to employers. We try to keep our finger in the pulse of the industry all the time.
Sure.
And I think that, you know, there are some really good schools out there, and they will hire from us more than the others just because they see a higher level of quality of education than maybe just you're being trained to get a license. We go above and beyond that as some of the other private schools. We're just not barely giving them what they need. We really want them to be successful.
You know, I look at this gainful employment ratio, and I'm wondering if the government ever applied it to somebody who takes women's studies in Harvard, or somebody who majors in Black studies. I mean, Clarence Thomas.
Social justice.
What's that?
Think of the people that are like all about the social justice. This is, I believe that is a course of study.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Universities. Yeah. So you know, I wonder, though.
And then why then, if we are doing such a stellar job in funding education that provides a very favorable gainful employment ratio, that we need to reimburse people for tuition? Think about that. Why is that? If this ratio is working, okay, then why is it that we have to pay, you know, that Biden wants to do that? And I guess the other thing is, you mentioned a key word when I asked you the question, and the key word was control. I think when you get through all of this stuff, all through the red tape and everything else, it's all about that. And that is the Marxist agenda. I mean, that's really what's going on here, in my opinion. You know, as I look at this, and I read your paper on this, and got a little bit educated on what you guys are doing. And you are a microcosm to a bigger problem. And it's wonderful that you're taking the initiative to go after this and fight this, because not many people do that. It's not fun to do, right? And it's not easy. And so there's a lot of risk involved in doing this personally and professionally. So I applaud you for your courage, you know, in terms of pushing this forward, because I think not only will your industry benefit from this, but other industries will as well. So the Obama administration, it started there. Trump kind of put a damper on it by his change on this whole thing. And then Biden comes back in and reverses everything that Trump did. It's not surprising to me, because I think once you understand the overarching assault on our country and our way of life, this thing called America, the experiment called America, all of this stuff makes sense. It's not a mystery anymore when I see something like this that says, hey, why are they doing that? It doesn't make sense, you know? And you go through all the different reasons why they shouldn't do it. But if you go back to the Marxist agenda and say to yourself, they want control, then all of this makes perfect sense as to what they're doing.
Well, you know, and people are also like, you know, why trade schools, like what the for-profits, and oh, we've seen some things in the news. And one, you know, two of the comments, so I've met with members of Congress, all the Arizona members of Congress, senators, met with Undersecretary Quall, and had conversations with them, flew to Washington, D.C. to talk about other ways that we could still have transparency and still have some sort of metrics, but it has to be applied across all of higher education. So that right. women's studies class, that social justice class, the all these degrees, that it's applied across all of higher education to make it fair and equitable. And they just won't do it because there have been a few bad actors. And you know, those bad actors, of course, shine a negative light on all the really good schools doing really great things and putting people out into the workforce where they're able to have really great jobs and be good role models for their families. And we know that in life, in humans, there are bad everybodies. There are, you know, every profession, you have accountants who don't do what they should do and then their accounting ledgers, or there's some teachers that have done some bad things. I mean, but they're not, the federal government is not swooping in with a big broad paintbrush and eliminating an entire profession, an entire sector. But that's what they're doing with us. And we're like the small guys getting caught up in the big net. And so the Biden administration added another level of a metric where they will compare the graduate of our schools. It's been out of school for 3 years. So that, you know, I have a girl maybe 19 years old. She comes to school, she graduates, and now she's 22, 23 years old. She's young, she's just getting started. They're going to compare her income to that of a 27-year-old to 35-year-old that has a high school diploma and no post-secondary education on record. And there's no gender equity. So you could have a 35-year-old guy, you know, working construction, making $80 an hour. Or, you know, I think about these longshoremen that were going on strike. Yeah, I don't know how many, they're just maybe out of high school, and they're going to get paired to a little 23-year-old girl who's been out of beauty school for a few years. It's building her clientele. There's just no equity. And they think that that is a fair analysis. Somebody that's literally been out of school for, out of high school for 15, 16, whatever that is, to a you know, a young person that's just getting started. And they're going to use the income in this first tranche from 2021 and 2022, which are COVID years. And everybody knows that everything shut down, and the beauty industry specifically was hit so hard because it, you're touching and you're in close proximity.
It was eliminated, except for Nancy Pelosi. It was eliminated.
Except for Nancy Pelosi.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they've added that. And it's just a ridiculous comparison. And they will not take. So if you're a high school graduate and you are a girl that has decided to start a family and you decide not to enter the workforce, they're going to take you out of the cohort. So your $0 income does not bring down the median income. But if you're a girl that went to beauty school and graduates, but decides to start a family, and we have many of those, they're going to keep your $0 income in the cohort. Mm-hmm. So then that median income number goes down. And that just makes no sense.
What if that young girl wants to start a family and she works part time?
If she were, and if she works part time, that then her that low income, that lower income, I should say, will be included. And that's a great talking point, especially in the, I will tell you, like the medical assisting, the allied health world, and in the beauty industry world, a lot of the women work part time.
Yeah.
But the Department of Education's position is you need to work full time. If you're going to use taxpayer dollars for your financial aid, you need to go out there and make the most money so that we get the best ROI on the investment in you. And then they, again, you talk about, Mark, the control. They're trying to control then the future lives.
Because they do not want you to procreate. Okay, that is a tenet of the globalist. I'm telling you, it all ties back to that. It all ties back to that. And by the way, all of these things that you're talking about, Kathy, that you say, well, you know, it's not fair and it doesn't make sense. I hope our listeners don't think that it's just incompetence that is doing this. They know exactly what they're doing. They know exactly what's going on there. Okay. And it's not, there's nothing incompetent about any of them. Biden was a really good ploy here for them because he was such a bumbling, especially in his elder years, that we as Americans in general just wrote it off as, hey, just an incompetent old man and he's got dementia, whatever the heck he got. That's not the case at all. Biden knows exactly what he was doing. Kamala Harris, she's not very educated. She slept her way to the top. She doesn't deserve to be there. She's not very qualified. Well, if she's not very qualified, how is it that she's running for president? Okay? She knows what she's doing. She's not dumb. Now, how she got there may be somewhat immoral, but at the end of the day, there is nothing incompetent about what these clowns are doing. Nothing. This is all calculated, 100%.
And I might add that a woman in the beauty industry, let's say she does want to, you know, she gets married, has a family, and she decides to she's going to have her own business. So now she has a room in her home that she's using as an office space and she's developing a clientele. That takes at least 3 to 5 years. Mm-hmm. You know, to really get profitable. That's why you do it at home, and it allows her to be at home. It's, you know, all of the benefits of working from home. Everybody knows that at this point. But it's kind of interesting. It's like they want everybody to get a J-O-B as opposed to allowing people that are entrepreneurial to go out and make their own way. That too is, that's just anti-American. Talk about anti-capitalist. It is Marxist.
Well, Susan, it was no different than I think during COVID, where last count I saw, we lost 600,000 small businesses for yeah. good. But the Walmarts of the world and strip clubs and all that stuff, they were all allowed to stay open, right? And so there is an assault on capitalism, I think, as Kathy mentioned when she first started out in her talk today. There is an assault on capitalism. And, you know, I think what you're doing here is admirable. Now, I have a question for you, Kathy. Do you think there should be a gainful employment ratio at all?
I do not. Okay. I would not support that because it starts to infringe upon free choice. You know, mm-hmm. There are requirements that all the colleges and universities and our schools, we provide information. Mm-hmm. You know, we all have school catalogs. There is a website called the U.S. College Scorecard that is motivated by the Department of Education. And you can look up any school that offers Title IV funding and you can find out everything about them, how much they cost, what's the ratio teacher to student, what's their repayment, the median loan debt, what's the repayment of loans. All that consumer information is out there. And then let the Americans make their choice of where they want to go that works for them. And so I don't believe that we need to have burdensome government regulations bogging down the system and taking away the free enterprise on top of that. So, you know, I mean, that one of our arguments with Secretary Quall was, that if you're gonna make us have gainful employment, then make it for everybody. But they would never do that. And I think that if we can get Trump elected, you know, I've already dropped it in many people in higher levels of leadership that please don't wait 3 years to rescind it. If we don't win in court, please make it part of your 100-day agenda. Just, it's a swipe of a pen, and rescind the gainful employment rule, because what it does to us, it leaves us, we're all considered, all of our schools are considered small business. It's a very uneven, unpredictable landscape that we're in. This year we're in business, and then the Democrats come in, and then we're fearful, and then the Republicans are back. And it's just, it's really hard. You know, I thought the hardest thing that we would ever survive would be COVID, especially in a beauty school, because it's hands-on. You're teaching, you know, young people how to cut hair and color hair, and you have to be able to touch people. And it was really challenging. And I thought that was going to be my biggest challenge I've ever faced in my life. And instead, it's my own federal government that's going to be our biggest challenge. So, you know, so with this newest rule, once again, the little beauty school association has filed a lawsuit. We filed it back on December 22nd of 2023. And right. Yeah, just in December. And our first briefs were submitted about a month ago, maybe 6 weeks ago. And then the department has till November 8th, and we're going to have this back and forth till the end of the year. And we're hoping for a ruling maybe February, maybe as late as March of 2025. And Suzette, you brought up the Chevron doctrine, and Mark, so did you. I mean, that's a historic case. That I don't think that when Chevron came into existence back in the 80s, early 80s, right, I believe is when it was, that it would have been taken advantage of the way that it has. But, you know, politics have changed, and it's so polarized. And as Suzette, you and I were talking, is that this gainful employment is not a law or a statute. This was not a bill that was sponsored by a member of Congress that got voted on the floor. This is a rule that was brought forth by a government agency that thinks that they know better and goes through this negotiated rulemaking process. And I want to point out to everybody, another very unconstitutional measure here was that there was no representative from the beauty, barber, and wellness schools at the table.
Wow.
There was a representative from a for-profit school, but it's very different than who we are. And we asked the negotiator to please allow a representative from our sector, and they did a vote during their, I believe it was their second meeting, and the Department of Ed did a thumbs down. So we weren't even represented.
Now here's something that I just thought of, Kathy. When you have your own business, you, especially a home business, you can file a Schedule C along with your taxes. So you get tax advantages for starting your own business that directly cut into the amount of money the federal government can take out of your check if you're working for a salon. If you're an employee, that's very different. You pay much higher taxes than if you're self-employed. So here's a federally funded agency trying to hold on to their golden egg. That's how I see it. They want as many tax dollars as possible to fund their operation, what they see. I don't know if that has come up, but
not that particular idea, but you raise a really good point that we had brought up about the income data. that when you have a majority of our graduates going into their own business, their taxes are very different. They're starting their own businesses. And so there's a lot of write-offs. And so their income doesn't, they might be making a lot more, but because they've started their own business, they get to write it off. So it looks like their income is very small. So it's not a true representation of their income, but it's the American dream. And this is what I've explained to every member of Congress, is that don't you want our young people to go to school and start their own business and have flexibility and have the best type of work, you know, life, family balance? We educate primarily young women and young single women with children. And a 9-to-5 cubicle job is not going to work for them.
Well, the answer to that question, Kathy, is no, they don't want that.
Yeah.
They don't want that, you know, and this, again, let's just go back to what's going on here. You know, one of the interesting things about our Constitution is Article 2 talks about the executive powers of the president. Okay. And he is to administer and he is to enforce the laws that are written by Congress. So what happens is, and we did a couple episodes on executive orders and also on the, you know, unconstitutional agencies and regulations that get set. What happens is Congress passes a broad law and they may or may not, they create an agency, let's say Department of Ed in this case. Now, the president, and by the way, in the enumerated powers, Article 1, Section 8, there's nothing in it that says we should be involved in education at all at the federal level. But let's put that aside for a minute. They pass a broad law. Now, the regulations that get passed, as you described, Kathy, are at the discretion of some bureaucrat, not a lawmaker that you that represents you. And, oh, yeah, by the way, those regulations and executive orders, which are not even listed. Executive orders is never listed in the Constitution. There's nowhere to be found. But an executive order is supposed to be to clarify the administration of a law, not to write a law. Same with regulations, not to write a law, but to put a regulation in that fairly represents the intent of the law as passed by Congress.
Yes.
So a one-off example of an abridgment on our rights is during COVID, since we mentioned COVID, the CDC, Center for Disease Control, of all people, passed a regulation that said a landlord cannot evict a tenant for not paying their rent. And so many landlords lost their property because the banks foreclosed on them. Okay. So that was done by the CDC of all people. Well, that's strictly unconstitutional. But now that they set that out, how are you going to convince a tenant who's now unemployed because of government executive orders, shutting down restaurants, shutting down beauty schools? Okay, so if you're a beautician and your sole income comes from that, and the government says, well, you got to shut down, you can't have anybody in your shop, you're not bringing in income. And then here along comes the CD saying, hey, look, you don't have to pay your rent. And he loses his home. Okay, see the mess that they created? And all of these things, these executive orders and these regulations are not designed to create law. Now, many of them have been shot down by the Supreme Court over the course of time, but there's so many of them that you can't do them all. Okay. You got 9 people on the Supreme Court. So, and they decide which cases they take, right? Every year, I think there's thousands and thousands of petitions to the Supreme Court and they only take a handful of cases. So that means a lot of bills are being passed that are unconstitutional, like, or regulations Rules. Or executive orders. Okay, so when you look at all of this, we have established frameworks in our government that abridges the checks and balances and abridges the rights of the American citizen. I mean, you know, that's what's going on. Now, I do happen to know that, like in New York City, I remember Mayor what was his name? Not Adams, but the one before him.
Had an all-out assault. De Blasio?
Thank you, De Blasio. De Blasio, sorry. Had an all-out assault on a whole set of private schools in New York City. Okay, and it's all about the union. It's all about money. It's all about that. It's all about control. Okay, so, and this goes on and on and on and on and on. They're against chartered schools. They're against the voucher program because of that control. Now, I want to just take a moment, Kathy, and read something to you. This is from the Communist Manifesto. If you're watching on YouTube or Rumble, I'm holding up the book. This book, I think, Suzette, cost me $10 on Amazon. You can read it in an hour. This is the written manifesto by Karl Marx and Friedrich Engels, okay? In 1848, is that right? I think so, 1848. This book should be required reading for every American citizen, okay? And then I ask people to look at this and compare our government and what we're doing in cases like Kathy's talking about against this. Now, I'm going to read one thing in here, just one short thing. This is number 10 of the 10 tenets of the Communist Manifesto. He combines a couple of things in here, but free education for all children in public schools. Now, we all know there's no such thing as free education, right? Abolition of children's factory labor in its present form, and a combination of education with industrial production. Now, one of the other tenets here in the Communist Manifesto is to own all forms of production. Okay, you see how that ties together? Okay, they're going to own all forms of production, and they're going to combine education with industrial production, and they will control what you learn. You know, they will control what you know or what you're able to read. I mean, why do you think the first thing besides guns that the tyrants of this world go in and they destroy all the books and they kill all the teachers? I've been to China many, many times, and you cannot get on Fox News or CNN for that matter. That's probably a good thing, but you on the internet, you can't get on Facebook. LinkedIn, Bill Gates shut down LinkedIn a couple of years ago. You cannot get on LinkedIn. And he made a deal with the Chinese government. So all these platforms, when you're in China, they're closed off and they're so protected from what really is going on. That's what this is all about. Okay. They're implementing this over there. And you get a guy like Tim Cook, who runs Apple, CEO of Apple. You get Klaus Schwab of the World Economic Forum. All think that China's framework of government is what should be done here. All these guys. Okay. And there's others as well, right? So this whole movement and lawsuit that you're going through is one of the ways that we need to fight. Unfortunately, we shouldn't have to do this. But we are. You know, so well, I've got a note from you that says that, okay, motions were filed on September 13th. And I think you just went through this. Because government is going to file its opposition cross motion on November 8th. You will file your opposition and reply briefs based on the November 8th filings by the government. And you got until December 20th to do that. And then the government will file its last brief on January 31st, 2025. It's like a tennis court game, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's like volley back and forth, right? And then you said you probably will get some sense of a ruling come February, March, April timeframe.
Yeah, what we don't know is if the judge is going to want oral arguments. And if there's oral arguments, then now that we're definitely into March. And so, but yeah, we're looking first quarter of next year to have some sort of ruling. If we can, you know, if Trump can win, I would ask them to rescind it. And so, you know, the next question is, well, what are the next steps? Because, you know, this is a pendulum, right? Republicans in office, they rescind it, the Democrats come back, and it's just, yep. It's chaotic. And it's, mm-hmm. And so The Higher Education Act is up and has been up to be reauthorized and updated. And it should have been done. And I think that the Trump administration thought they were going to get four more years. And so we've already been working with the Education and Workforce Committee. So Congresswoman Dr. Virginia Fox, who is the current chairwoman, she is stepping down. She will not be the committee chair next time if we obviously stay in office. We've been working with her on language. We have to protect the term gainful employment so that it can't be misconstrued in the future. And we really have to go through now the Higher Education Act is actually the law. So we have to go through it and we have to think about how the other side can turn it and twist it and protect some of the language in there and put something out that's fair and equitable for everybody. And that process has already started. I also work very closely with Congressman Burgess Owens out of Utah. He chairs the subcommittee for higher education. And I went to his policy retreat in South Carolina and we talked about, you know, the future and how we can be very proactive. He is one of the members from the education committee that is vying for the chair of the committee as a whole. Tim Walberg from Michigan is the other gentleman that would like that role. And so we're in touch with both. And that would be, you know, beat him in court and then work with Congress to get good language that can stand the test of time so that we don't have to fight these threats that come up all the time.
Do you favor Burgess Owens as the chair?
I personally do. Yes, he's
okay.
Tim has been more workforce. Burgess is all about education. He wants his legacy to be education. He is very, very entrenched in the trade schools. He's been here to Arizona many times. I've taken him to many schools. He is very passionate. Very passionate about education.
You know, Kathy, when I ran for Congress, I got to know quite a few congressmen. Paul Gosar is a really good friend. Eli Crane, who beat me in the primary, is turning out, I think, to be a great congressman. And he's a friend. I just saw him a couple of weeks ago. Andy Biggs is just phenomenal, right? I think these three alone are some of the best congressmen in the country. I can't say much about the others, but in Arizona. But I could say a lot about them. But anyway, the way it works in Congress, and I learned this, I think I learned this from Paul, actually. You, in order to get a committee chairmanship, it's not like in corporations where you say, okay, who's the best person? Like when you got the position here of the president and chair of the AACS, right? They picked you because you got your you-know-what together, okay? And you know what you're doing. And they elected you because they saw you as qualified. In government, when it comes to these chairs, it's about how much money can you raise?
Yep.
Okay? Now, the one chairmanship of the House Ways and Means Committee, which is perhaps the most powerful committee in Congress, you have to raise, what I was told, $2 million just to be considered, okay? And if you get selected to run that committee, it's only good for 2 years, and then you got to do it again, okay? So it's not about who's the best qualified. Now, it sounds to me like you have a high regard for for Burgess Owens, and what I'm trying to tell people, if you care at all about this this particular issue, you need to send him some campaign contributions.
Yes.
Okay. That's how it's unfortunate. Now, it sounds like we have a good match here. We got somebody qualified, somebody passionate, but if you want to get him in position, there's going to be some monetary thing he's going to have to hit in order to qualify for that position. So any listeners out there listening to this, Burgess Owens out of Utah, send him your campaign contributions, if you will. And not only a campaign contribution, send him any contribution. They'll take, believe it or not, they'll take money after the election is over. And so that's just, that's a gory details of how it works.
Well, thank you. Thank you for that, because it is true. Mm-hmm. And I have been working really hard with his team to raise the money. The steering, and it's a steering committee that selects him. I was down in Tucson when Speaker Mike Johnson was there, and I made sure I whispered in his ear that I thought Burgess would make a great chair. But I also know that it's about the money. And I've seen Burgess is flying all over the place, helping out the Republican Party. And I do not know where he is at. I think it's pretty close between him and Congressman Wahlberg. So yes, anybody listening, just burgessowens.com. I don't know what his website is, but he'll do right by us. And that's not just higher education, that's K through 12.
Yeah, right.
So it's all of education, and he, you know, we're all like-minded. He would make an excellent chair.
Awesome. So Kathy, is there any other thing we should know now? Because what I would like to do is have you back after some of this dust settles on this. Because I think the election is going to be a big deal, of course.
Yeah.
And the way the court case goes may, in fact, be subjected to who wins presidency to some degree. You know,
yeah.
So it would be great to have you back when the time is right, when you think you got something to report to us. We'd love to have you back and get an update on this. So, you know, let me know, let Suzette know, and we'll go from there.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You know, we're not Joe Rogan. We don't have a large following yet, but we are getting there because we just started. And, you know, we're in our, what did I say, 37th episode. But I had Ted Nugent on. We had Sheriff Joe Arpaio, a good friend of mine, and we had him on. So we're starting to get some pretty good, you know, people on this. We had Paul Gosar on not too long ago, and talking about emergency spending and how that abridges our rights in the constitutional requirements of Congress. And we have other people lined up down the line to get a little bit more popular notoriety here. But a lot of what we do is kind of like classroom stuff where we're just teaching people the Constitution. You know, I just did an episode on Ben Franklin, a phenomenal individual. Suzette did one on Thomas Jefferson. We've done some of the amendments, some of the clauses. We talked about constitutional economics. So we're just trying to teach people the Constitution. And I think the more they learn about that framework, the easier it is to understand your struggles and what you're going through. And by the way, your struggles are our struggles, right? Because this is an assault on our freedoms. But I think it's a lot better to understand it once you have that background and that foundation of the basics of how our government is set up and how different it is and how it's being assaulted on a daily basis. So,
you know, I'm thinking all of this is great stuff. And I'm thinking beyond beauty school, think of someone that has a really esoteric calling. They want to be a shiatsu master. There are schools that you can go to, private schools in the United States, that will teach this Japanese method of acupressure. Right. And it's an extraordinary talent that would go away. Why shouldn't that person have an opportunity to borrow money to do that? If there really is no parallel, you know, because a lot of massage schools and these kinds of things are private. And I think that's really the key, should be like, who's paying back the loan? Not who's like what you're studying. If I want to study watercolors, you know, I should be able to do that. And if I go to a community college, I can. But if I wanted to do that with I don't know who the modern day Ansel Adams would be. You know, I couldn't study with that person because they wouldn't have necessarily be teaching at a college. So I think this like very narrow idea of what education is through the government is frightening. So on my hat's off to you, Kathy. I think it's extraordinary what you're doing. I have taken advantage. I'm sure that some of the estheticians that I've gone to here in Sedona have been through your school. I'm going to talk to my girls this week, actually, and ask them if they're aware of this and share this with them, because I think it's so important that they contribute. Do you have a political PAC that where you can?
We do. So AACS does have a PAC. And we, you know, we raised our funds for the legal, which is not a small amount in today's world.
No.
But we have very generous school owners, and obviously this is the biggest threat we're facing, and we're going to be put out of business. So they've been very generous, and we've been able to fund our lawsuit. Our annual conference is actually next weekend, and I'm going to be doing another little fundraiser, because if Kamala Harris wins and we win in court, they'll appeal it. And I mean, this could go all the way to the Supreme Court. So we have to prepare for the worst case scenario.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, what court is this standing in right now?
So we are in a favorable district. We're the fifth district of Texas. Okay. And okay. we're with Judge Reed O'Connor, who is okay. a Bush number one appointee. And then if it ends up in an appeals court, it will be in New Orleans, which again is a favorable district for an appeal. I just wanted to make mention to you, Sue, that you brought up a really good point about it really should be about who's repaying the loans. For-profit schools are held to a standard that nobody else is on default rates. And if your repayment of loans gets too high, that is another way for them to put you in a warning and then a probation and take away your financial aid. And so, you know, listen, the average debt of somebody that goes to beauty school across the country in cosmetology is $8,900. We're not the problem with student debt in higher education. And the average repayment is $65 a month. And our students are repaying their loans. So this is not a case of irresponsible graduates not repaying their loans. It's really coming from other sectors of higher education. So I just wanted to bring that up because it's a very valid point.
It's a good point. Kathy, what's the website on the PAC? You want to?
I don't know. We don't really have a website for it. You know, it's really okay. Just kind of been an internal thing, but I can provide that for you. Because, you know, a big part of our job at AACS, the National Trade Association, has to lobby. And we spend a lot of time in Washington, D.C. and attending events and talking to members of Congress and educating them on these issues. And it takes a lot of money, as you all know, and it's exhausting. But if we want to survive in this world, it's what we have to do. I mean, this is an existential threat to us.
Yeah, it has a lot of ramifications across the board. By the way, so you could provide me with a link that people could send and,
yes.
and support this. So we'll pay when you can send that to me after this is done, and I will post that across the screen at this point in the episode.
Wow.
So that
thank
it will
you.
At least be
so
up
grateful
there.
For that.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So
well, you need the money. I mean, it's all about the money, right? If you can't fight your case in court, it's game over. And if you don't have money, you can't go to court.
But that's exactly though, Suzette, what they're doing is they know it's expensive and they'll bankrupt you and drag you through the courts until you're exhausted and you give up. And that's been the quid pro quo on, not quid pro quo, but the modus operandi, if you will, of the government when these things come up, you know. And that's why we got to remain diligent in this and vigilant as well. So so let me leave it at this, Kathy. So I have to let you know that I never realized how efficient the beauty industry has become. Because when I was in high school, I had hair down on my shoulders and I had hair into my eyes. It took, oh geez, at least 30 to 40 minutes to cut my hair. Now it only takes about 8 minutes. And so I chalk that up to the fact that the industry has just gotten more efficient. What do you think about that?
Sure.
That's it. That's exactly.
I have a Russian barber.
I don't see any earrings either. So
I never had an earring. Are you kidding me? Where I grew up, if I had an earring, I wouldn't be here today. Okay, or I wouldn't be looking the same way. But I have a Russian barber. Her name is Olga. Her and her husband Sam run this place here in Cave Creek, and she is so fast. She cuts my hair like I'm not thinking I'm going to get stabbed, you know, but she is so fast, and all the other ones are slower, but she's like quick, you know, and it's like, but of course there's not a lot to work with here. So you don't got to worry about that. So, Kathy, this has been really great. I'm really glad to have you on the show, and I will, let's stay in touch. Keep me posted and Suzette posted what's going on. And then we'll have you back when some of this dust settles on this case. And figure out where we go from there. So, and again, like I said, I think this has a lot more far-reaching ramifications than just your industry. And I'm not trying to minimize your industry, don't get me wrong, but yeah. You're fighting a fight that's bigger, believe it or not, than your industry, which I one of the things I really wanted to have you on the show for is to get that out there and get you guys your story out, because this is the kind of crap, I hate to say it, that goes on every day in our government. And most people back down and let the infringements on our freedoms just go by the wayside. And you're not doing that. So God bless you. That's great.
Thank you. Yeah, not on my watch. Thank you. thank you so much. I really appreciate this opportunity, and it means a lot, very much so, to our sector, and it does. It has far-reaching consequences, and people need to know that it starts small, and it will blow up if we do not resist the movement.
That's exactly right.
The patriotic spirit of Americans. Thank you, Kathy. A delight to meet you.
Thank you.
We all fight for our freedoms, and it's a continuous fight. We just wear different uniforms. That's all.
Yeah.
And so, Kathy Kaluch.
Yes.
Thank you very much. We really appreciate you being on our show, and we'll certainly have you back and see you down the line.
Thank you.
Okay, so episode 37. We call this The Federal Government's Assault on Private For-Profit Schools, episode 37. Thanks, Kathy. Suzette, thanks. We'll see you guys later.
It's been a delight. Great to meet you.
Bye-bye now. God bless.
Thanks for listening to The Constitution Solution, one podcast under God, where we hold that strict adherence to the Constitution is the solution to most of our country's problems.
You can find other episodes on our website at 1787solution.com, YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and most other platforms. We're your hosts, Mark DeLuzio and Suzette Lawrence. Until next time, may God bless you and may God bless America.